Hello and welcome to today's G4C podcast, brought to you by the Generation for Change Committee, part of Constructing Excellence Southwest. I'm Dylan Bishop, a quantity surveyor at 21st Century Building Services and a member of the G4C Bath Committee. For those of you who may not be familiar with G4C, we're an organisation dedicated to bringing together the next generation of construction professionals, encouraging collaboration, sharing knowledge, and driving positive change across the industry. Today's episode is called Building Better Minds. Construction is built on people, and looking after those people is just as important as delivering projects safely and successfully. Today, we're discussing one of the biggest challenges facing our industry, mental health. Before we begin, we'd like to make listeners aware that this episode discusses mental health, stress, and suicide within the construction industry. If you find these topics difficult or they affect you personally, please take care whilst listening. If today's conversation raises any concerns for you or someone you know, we encourage you to speak to someone you trust or seek support from the appropriate services. I'm delighted today to be joined by Rob Murray from New Pangea, an organisation helping businesses build resilient people, stronger teams, and healthier workplace cultures. Rob, thank you very much for joining us today. It's great to have you with us.
Dylan, it's a privilege to be here and to talk to you.
Thank you. So we'll start off. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your role at New Pangea. What is New Pangea, and what inspired you to start the company?
So my background is not really from construction. I did have a job perhaps in my late teens, early 20s, where I did a bit of labouring in Bath. But I grew up in a house of construction workers. My father was an engineer and worked on construction projects his entire life. But my background is policing. I was a police officer for nearly 20 years, or certainly worked in policing for about 20 years. And I left that around COVID time, got in a rowing boat and rowed across the Atlantic Ocean. And during that process, and I can talk to you a bit about that a bit later, had a bit of an epiphany about what was important to me, what kept me well, what kept me performing at my best. One of the nights we were rowing with a crew member, and the waves were particularly big and particularly scary. And we decided to distract ourselves with talking about what we were going to do when we got back to dry land. And part of this was the idea of New Pangea was born, where we go in and we help companies allow their teams to unleash their potential by focusing on things that really matter to people. So that stuff, that really intrinsic stuff that's baked into us through evolution and years of culture that really make a difference to how we feel about ourselves and how we feel about our work and therefore how well we perform.
Wow. And that's going into different businesses across different sectors, if I'm...
Yeah, so we're not construction specific by any stretch of the imagination. So I've worked across, motor industry, you name it, we've worked with them. So really exciting. Construction is probably where I get the most satisfaction. It's a really, really interesting industry to work in. And really challenges, I think, some misconceptions I had about construction, maybe. Perhaps because my experience is probably with my father, perhaps in the 90s. It's a group of people that just solve problems all day long. That's all they do. So I find it really inspiring to work with people that can just got this attitude of overcoming and understanding challenges.
And can you see a lot of transferable similarities between your background in policing and construction?
Surprisingly, yes. So maybe not all negative, but probably some of them are. So I'll start with the positive ones. Then actually, you've got a group of people that come together and achieve things together as a team. So and that team is greater than the sum of its parts. Stuff that you think is never going to be possible can get done by the end of the day, and nobody bats an eyelid. Where it's perhaps is a bit challenged in the same way as policing is. It's predominantly male, probably more in construction, a little bit in policing, but I was going to sort of that masculine culture. So it's not necessarily about gender. It's about that keep going, soldier on. Sometimes showing, you know, some vulnerabilities is not a good thing to do. And that probably stores up problems in both sectors, which I think are quite similar.
And I think that's a challenge we need to tackle across all sectors, not just construction.
Yeah, absolutely.
So your message with New Pangaea, vulnerability is strength. What does that mean? And what does it mean to you personally?
So it's about, it's kind of, so if I kind of give a bit of a construction metaphor, you know, nobody calls somebody weak that reports a near miss. You know, someone says, hang on a minute, something here, something, it's not safe what we're doing. No one considers that weak. They say that's good practice. So in the same way, actually somebody saying, I'm not feeling great at the moment, or I'm not 100% today. My Monday this week does not look the same as my Monday last week. So I need to think about how I do things differently. So it's about admitting to yourself that actually every day is not the same. Life is not linear. Secondly, saying it out loud makes you an incredible role model for other people. It gives everybody else permission around you. But actually, that go back to that problem-solving mindset that until we acknowledge the problem, we can't solve it. Or we can't move around it. Sometimes these problems are huge and, you know, cultural and, you know, it's going to take perhaps a generation to solve some of the things. But actually, we can go around somebody's problem in an effective way. So yeah, it's about admitting to yourself, being that role model and acknowledging the problem so that we can actually do something about it.
And I think that's important to ask the question why mental health matters in construction. And before we recorded, we spoke about some really eye-opening statistics.
Mm.
The CIOB recently reported that 58% of people in construction regularly experience stress. Over 1 in 4 have suicidal thoughts. Why do you think the industry finds itself in this position?
I think to answer that would probably be like the $64,000 question, but I can give you my opinion. I think it's predominantly male. Men are less good at talking about how they're feeling than women are. And that kind of is a self-perpetuating culture of stoicism and soldiering on. But actually, there are some structural issues in construction that are fairly unique. So the way a lot of people are paid is different. Most people are self-employed. It's an industry that actually I think is paid relatively well. So it's not to say that people are underpaid, but people are not far from struggling financially if work doesn't continue. I think there's some other demographic issues which I think are really interesting. So as a neurodivergent person, the proportion of neurodivergent people in construction is significantly higher than other industries. And actually there's some research that indicates people with ADHD or dyslexia or OCD are more likely to suffer from mental health conditions. And I think another factor is some of the sites that I've gone and worked on. And as someone that's worked shifts for a long portion of my life, it didn't surprise me hugely. But we asked people what time they set their alarm in the morning, and large proportions of the room were before 5 o'clock in the morning. And I know some of your listeners will be able to say, yeah, that's just life. You know, the alarm at 4:30 in the morning is just how it goes. So actually, some of the structural issues around there are stopping people, you know, getting enough sleep, which is absolutely critical to maintaining that optimal balance of work and recovery.
And of course, important simple factors like that are going to have an effect on people's health. So what do you think of those figures when I say that? Is it surprising, especially with some of the organizations you've worked with?
I do have to sometimes check them. So the first time I read a paper on this was 2003, and On the Tools did a really interesting survey. And actually the Charge Institute of Building have kind of refreshed those and have reinforced what they were saying. But I think the most stark figure for me is that actually in 2024, and that's the most recent data they got, 355 people that worked in construction took their own lives. And actually, that is a horrific thing to report, but I've been policing. I've been that person that's delivered that message to families to say that somebody has felt they had no other option than to take that decision. So I kind of got that feeling of colleagues now going and delivering that message to families of people that work in construction and just find that really, really devastating. And to put it in perspective, I think 35 people were killed in accidents on construction, as a result of accidents on construction sites in the same year. So, and I kind of, when I speak to senior people in construction and tier one contractors, I sort of say, you know, how much effort and resource and thought do you put into keeping people physically safe? And it's a lot, and rightly so. But how does that compare about how you're thinking about keeping your workforce mentally fit as well? And that's kind of a challenge I'd push back. But they are stark. And some of the interesting stuff is around how leaders perceive their ability to deal with it. So the Chartered Institute of Building survey from last year said that 70% of managers felt unprepared to deal with mental health or understand the risk that mental health presents within their teams. So I think that's really significant, and we need to help managers and leaders with skills and knowledge to be able to do that.
Yeah, those figures are quite devastating, and yes, some of the effects of we just shouldn't be having this issue in industry. And as you say, we've invested so much to keeping people physically safe on site, and I think we need to do a lot more to keep people mentally safe as well. Well, why do you think that hasn't progressed at the same rate? Is it perhaps education? People don't know how to approach the subject.
I think culture is definitely part of it. So that oh crikey, do I know? Leaders thinking they need to be an expert in mental health to be able to support a team member that perhaps doesn't necessarily have to have a mental health illness or be diagnosed or anything, but actually might come into work and be acting differently than the way they normally do. So actually having the confidence to have those conversations. So that cultural piece and that training piece. Britain leads the world and Europe in its safety in construction. So, which kind of really gives me confidence that this is, you know, like I said, we've got a workforce of problem solvers. So this is definitely an issue that we can get on top of. It's less obvious, I think, is the first thing. So if you have somebody injured or on a site, it's there, it's present, people see it. These things aren't necessarily happening at work. They would happen elsewhere. A significant thing is, there's legislation. There's really quite tight legislation around health and safety at work, which has been extended in recent years to include well-being and work-related stress. So that'll be interesting to see how that changes the narrative when actually the health and safety executive actually prosecuting companies, not necessarily construction, but companies that aren't supporting people's well-being and preventing work-related stress. So I think the needle needs to move that actually this affects the bottom line of construction. This is a business issue, not just a it's the right thing to do for our workforce issue, which it is the right thing to do. But actually, if you have an accident on a site, it's going to cost money one way or another, and I think that drives cultural change fast. So I think that's probably what the biggest difference is.
And would you say that issue's potentially driving people out the industry as well?
Yeah, it's really interesting. So I go to quite a lot of construction events, and actually the one of the biggest themes that comes out of those is talent pipeline. It's people coming into the industry and working with and talking to people that work in colleges. Around educating people in trades and saying actually we've got a consistent gap of about I think the last number of quotas is about 290,000 people short, and that's due to grow over the next few years. So it's got to be something that is a factor that people are really thinking about constructing a positive place for them to be. I did find some statistics around, it's from 2001, so a little bit older, but again, survey-based, that 53% of people have either had time off work as a result of their mental health within construction, or have left jobs. So, I think it's got to be, we've got to understand what's pushing people out of the industry and plug those gaps in order to meet the targets of future growth within the country.
Yeah. And what would you say some of those biggest pressures are facing people working in the industry?
So when you ask people, when these big surveys are done, the thing that comes out is financial insecurity, self-reporting. So they say that financial insecurity is the most challenging thing for them. And I think that's to do with the makeup of the workforce being a large proportion self-employed. But it's probably a bit deeper than that. So I talked a little bit about predominantly being male, interesting stuff around neurodivergent people, and you've kind of got this almost a perfect storm of construction is this incredible career where you're only limited by your own ambition, really. But it brings those people in that actually are probably more likely to suffer or experience mental ill health than the rest of the population.
And I guess that's another issue. We've got so many different people, and they're likely to express their issues and their mental health in different ways. So I presume that's another important thing for companies to recognise the
difference
and how these issues can come about.
Yeah, totally. So I've run some sessions on sites with our operative level, and say what are the things that you might notice in yourself or your peers that might be an indication that they're not operating at full potential, or you know, mental health might be a bit of a factor for them at that period of time. And it's basically their behaviour has changed. So it is they could talk a lot or talk less or eat a lot or eat less or be irritable or so it's when that behaviour changes, I think. And part of that of the privilege and responsibility of being a leader is around understanding that you've got a group of individuals that you lead. And in construction, that team might be thrown together at short notice. So I was talking to one team. It's this, we're just starting to really optimally fire as a group of people. And then the job finishes and we're all dispersed onto different projects. And we might come back together in the future. We might not as different groups of subcontractors. So it's really identifying when someone's waving a flag at you to say, I'm not feeling great today. And that might mean that they come in and shout at somebody or have a row with somebody in the car park, or they're withdrawn over lunch, or actually, you know, they might test positive for drugs or alcohol in the morning if you're doing random drug tests. That might be a significant factor. And, you know, that presents really challenging set of circumstances for people in leadership positions. You can't have somebody on a building site that is affected by drugs and alcohol, and what's the best thing to do for them and for your organisation. One of the stats, I think, is that out of the 2003 on the tools survey, was that almost two-thirds of people within construction said they mediated the feelings of mental ill health with drugs or alcohol. I just thought that was really striking. And actually, from a personal perspective, coming from my career in policing, that was certainly a way that we managed stress. And I managed stress was to just have a drink at the end of the day. And that sometimes that drink was more than other days, and perhaps was almost certainly not healthy at the time. So.
And that's probably not something that's going to help an issue such as mental health.
No. So yes, you're just going to be... Borrowing from tomorrow, I think, is a really good way of thinking about, you know, if you're drinking might make you feel a bit better in the short term, or taking prescription drugs that aren't prescribed to you or illegal drugs, they might make you feel better in the short term, but they're almost certainly going to make you feel worse in the long term.
And that can also have effects on not only people's mental capacity to work, but also their physical capacity as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Obviously, that could be another factor that causes stress. If you get a red card and can't come back on site, so I I think is important. How do we prevent people feeling the need to do that? Can we offer any other ways of dealing with their stress? What can we suggest to companies to help prevent people getting in this situation?
So I think it's that first of all, many industries are at the point of this awareness. You know, we have awareness and, you know, you see a lot of stuff on the back of toilet doors with spotting the signs or signposting people to go to either charities or employee assistant programs. There are some really forward-thinking people, tier one contractors that are offering supply chain assistance programs. So anybody that works on a site with this particular tier one contractor has access to counselling, has access to information and knowledge, which I think is really important. But actually, if we then think of it in the same way as we think about physical health and keeping people physically safe, actually that preventative stuff. So it's about giving people the knowledge and education around how important sleep is, how important, you know, social connections are, how important what we eat is, but actually then giving them the tools to then embed those habits. So I spend a lot of time talking to people and I seem to just say, just charge your mobile phone in a different room than one that you sleep in. Don't have your mobile phone. That's the first thing you do. And there's the embedding those habits and really simple things to
think, as you say as well, is the simple things that sometimes get overlooked, the sleeping well, you know, 8 hours plus a day, eating correctly, exercise, big thing, not only for your physical health but your mental health, obviously releasing endorphins as well. And I guess with working on site, being up at early hours, as you say, when you've got that burnout at the end of the day, at the end of the week, maybe you don't have enough effort to do these types of things.
Yes. Yeah, and that's, you know, if you've worked 12 hours a day, Monday to Friday, and had an hour and a half commute on either end of your day, and you say to them, all you've got to do is go do part run on Saturday morning, they're not going to fancy that. They might be doing overtime. They might be doing their own projects. You know, a lot of these self-employed people are doing other things. So it's actually saying to people, you need to be kind to yourself as well, and just say, actually, I'm going to have a lie-in today, and I'm not going to do these things. Or I'm going to spend the day with my kids. That's what I'm going to do, you know, or whatever. Prioritize time with those people that are important to us.
Yeah, that is equally important as well, to have that support network.
Yeah.
So we talked a little bit about burnout and resilience. So during your Atlantic Rowing Challenge, how did potentially that burnout change your perspective on resilience and mental health?
So I'm... Well, yeah, probably pretty bit of a cliche, pretty typical. So I thought, well, I've worked shifts. I'm not going to feel particularly fatigued. So we rode 2 hours on, 2 hours off for about 5 weeks. So right, 24 hours a day. And I thought, well, I've got two children. They're teenagers now, but I've been through the not sleeping thing. I've worked shifts. I've done the getting up before 5 a.m. or getting home at, you know, 8:00 a.m. It'll be fine. But once I was fatigued and my theory is also away from those people that are really important to me, my kids and my wife and my friends and family. Actually, I really started to creak, and I play this in some of the sessions I do. Again, around that permission piece and being trying to be really vulnerable, I did a bit of a video diary for my children, and they never actually ever watched it. I don't think they were hugely bothered, but to try and give them an idea of what it's like to be in the middle of the Atlantic for weeks at a time, And quite a lot of that is me crying into a mobile phone, and I just fell apart. So I was really struck by that initially, to say, actually, when my needs aren't being met as a human being, emotionally I'm in bits, physically I'm in bits, because, you know, and the other thing was, when life got really hairy, so when the boat capsized a little bit and the waves were really big, the physical sensation I felt in myself, that heart rate increase, that, you know, dry mouth, that, you know, increased breathing was exactly the same as I had when I had a boss I couldn't get on with. And I was literally sitting on a rowing boat on the top of a 30-foot wave, and I was like, that's how I felt when the mobile rang and he rang me. So what happens in my body and all of our bodies in life and death situations is the same as when you've got a toxic culture at work. So so that was the two things. When my needs aren't being met, I fall apart and I'm no use to anybody. And my body doesn't understand the difference between keeping me alive and having a boss that's a bit grumpy.
And when you face some of these challenges, which were obviously quite physical, what did you do mentally to overcome then? And potentially what advice could you offer some of our listeners who may be experiencing these issues?
So I probably didn't understand what I was doing, but I've been back through this video that I recorded on Monday. I've got about 45 minutes of me. It's not all me crying into a mobile phone. Some of it's talking about sunsets and rainbows and dolphins and things like that. But actually, when it got really tough, I would talk about how grateful I was for the opportunity and how lucky I was to be in those circumstances. And actually, I've done some work around that in some of the neuroscience work I've done. And that piece around gratitude is really, really important. So now I write down three things. I scribble in my pad when I sit down at my desk, three things I'm grateful for. And it might be my coffee tasted, I had a really nice cup of coffee. Simple things that practicing gratitude. It sounds a bit woo-woo and it still feels a bit weird to me saying it out loud. But that piece around, I'm really lucky. I'm really fortunate to be in the circumstance I'm in. There's always challenges in life, but these are really good. And it actually has a significant impact on mood. You know, that sort of neuroplasticity piece around rewiring the brain to look less for threat and risk. And the other thing I do is I force myself to write down every day three things where I'm doing good things. I'm winning in life. It might be that I've managed to get the kids three breakfasts. It's not so bad now they're teenagers because they don't talk to each other. I've got them through breakfast without anybody hitting anybody else. So that might be where I'm winning in life. Or it might be I've got a contract that's going to see me through the next 6 months in the last 24 hours. So it's that focus on the positive and focusing on the gratitude piece was really important to me when I was really struggling on the ocean.
Wow. And I think what you say there links a lot in with perspective as well.
Yeah.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, that mindset piece.
And yeah, just recognizing that your situation might not be as bad as you think. And
yeah,
somewhat you can appreciate the situation you're in.
Yeah.
So when you go into these organizations to talk about the things you talk about, where do you normally start?
Well, we start with a little bit of, and I'll be really frank. I used the rowing stories, or occasionally I'll dip into some policing stories, depending on what sort of audience I've got, just as a bit of a hook to get people interested and listen. So I try and tell something that's a bit exciting and get them to listen. But then I talk about actually when I started feeling stressed on the rowing boat, this is what happened in my body. And it's the same thing that happened when we were prehistoric man and we were being hunted by a very cliched saber-toothed tiger. I've no idea if saber-toothed tigers actually predated on humans, but that is the example I use. So the same things happen in your body now when you're stressed as when we were evolving. And to say the reason that you feel the way you feel perhaps on days is just because you're a perfectly evolved human being. So that permission piece, I try and show a bit of vulnerability. So I talk about some of the things I've experienced in life, about having a career that I sang along to the radio on the way into work. Over time, things changed and actually I really dreaded going into work and I felt that really, really challenging. And saying that's okay. People feel that way. And then we really go to practical stuff. So we talk about how do you improve sleep? How do we focus on sleep when you've actually got a job that means your alarm goes off at 4 o'clock in the morning? You've got a young family that might wake you up in the night. So practical things that can improve sleep. Bit of stuff around what we're putting in our mouths. So hydration, really important. Food, really important. There's more understood now around the gut-brain axis, the way the gut and the brain speak to each other than ever before. And then we talk about social connection, movement. Not so much an issue for people that work in trades on building sites because usually they're pretty active all day. But yeah, you're right. The muscles are secreting, you know, molecules that are called hope molecules. Scientists call them hope molecules. So when you move your muscles, you you you're you actually really can impact mood. And then the final thing we talk about is a bit around self-reflection. And that sounds, again, like a bit to about meditation. We're all sitting on beanbags and doing yoga. But no, it's about that mindset piece. It's about that I'm grateful for life. I'm lucky to be here. And I'm winning. You know, I'm winning at life. Life's going well. So, and actually, if they can then leave with, and then each session they come to, they leave and they'll make a commitment. They're going to give something a go. They're going to not drink Red Bull or coffee after midday. It's caffeine impact sleep. Or they're going to reduce the amount of alcohol they consume a little bit, or the mobile phone charging thing. So it's about those really practical things that they can try. Give it a go. See how you feel.
That's interesting. So can you share an example of where you've seen a genuine culture shift within a business like that?
I don't, I was trying to think of a really good example where you know, we've gone from point A to point B. And I think, because I'm not in the businesses every day, but what is really striking is when I talk and say some and say, look, I used to pretend, you know, my email going off used to create a that stress response in me. My heart rate would increase because it would very rarely bring you good news. It was always something that, you know, work that had to be done. And I got around that by not looking. I couldn't look at my emails, so I just keep them closed some days, which was just not an effective way of managing anything. And talked about how that was feeling in my body. And I've had people stand up in rooms and say, "You're talking about me now. That's how I feel." When the phone rings, this is the response I get in my body. So I find that really validating. And dealing with subcontractors and subcontractors of subcontractors, I had the miss. I came in with the bias that this was a fairly transient workforce, that people were moving through very quickly. You know, there wouldn't have been those leadership relationships. And that wasn't the case. You had business owners that had that business for maybe a couple of decades, and they knew their teams and they understood their teams. And, you know, they were passionate about how they felt. But what was lacking was that joined up approach across the whole supply chain. So, so some of the work we've done has been around talking to people in the supply chain. But yeah, fascinating stuff.
So, how can leadership help improve some of those problems and manage courage to open up conversations and create a more united approach to construction projects and the wider scale?
I think this is the key. So it's high quality leadership is always what moves the needle in every industry, in every organization. So senior leaders need to invest in middle managers. And actually, interestingly enough, middle managers is where they feel the pinch the most in terms of reporting stress. It's the people caught in the middle that are kind of being squished. So it's about having the courage to say, if they are comfortable, and I don't think it's necessarily a responsibility to, it's about giving leaders the courage to say that, actually, my life isn't linear. It's not the same every day. And I've been through some of these challenges and I've come out the other side. And it just gives permission that for people to talk in the same terms. And building those relationships with people, whether that's at site induction or whether it's at toolbox talks or daily briefings or whatever format is run. But just to say that these you're important to us. And the way you feel is important to us as a business, and not just because it's the right thing to do, but because it's a good business decision and all those things. But it's about authenticity as well. So it's got to be real. They've got to mean it. And when you see leaders working in this way, it's incredible and inspirational. But and I think it's the challenge. And again, if we go back to that, perhaps policing and construction were perhaps a little bit similar. And I'm going to generalize because I think there are fabulous leaders in both sectors. But occasionally, you know, it was a little bit get it done attitude. I'm telling you to go and get that done. And actually, that isn't productive. That's not a way to inspire people and make people feel important.
So if there was one change you could make about leadership, not just in construction, but in general, what would it be?
So it's probably a bit of a wider point, but if you're going to build a cultural change within an organization, that requires capacity. You cannot do that at a moment of peak delivery or crisis. So if something's going wrong, or you are all flat out delivering a project, that is not the time to say we need to think about how we're doing this and that, and perhaps change the way we're delivering things. So you've got to be really deliberate in the way that you build this in. So it's at times where it's not a peak delivery mode, and not when things have gone wrong. It might be sparked out of stuff that's gone wrong, and you've looked at it and reviewed it and taken it forward. But actually, to say we're going to change the culture, but we're going to do this strategically and carefully at a time where it's going to have the highest impact. Because actually, if you say to people at a time of stress, we're going to make some changes now, that's more stress. Change is threat to human beings, and we'll respond to it in the same way we respond to any threat, which is not necessarily healthy.
And I think we're all fearful of change.
Totally. It's the threat. It's a complete threat response. So it's the same as the phone call from the bad boss, or sitting on top of the wave, or the saber-toothed tiger. That change is unknown, therefore it's a threat. So yeah, you respond in the same way.
So a lot of our listeners are young professionals. So I'd like to provide some advice to perhaps some of our younger listeners. Many of them feel pressure in the industry to prove themselves. How can they balance ambition with protecting their own mental well-being?
I think that's a great question, because you when you start on a career or in a new role, you want to impress people. You want to be the person that's working the hardest, that is delivering the best quality outcomes. And I think it's just, and I think probably the younger generations, God, I sounded really old when I said that, people coming into the workforce now are better at that probably than my generation. This perception that I've got to be there first and the last to leave and all that sort of stuff is breaking down. But just be kind to yourself and say, I can't maintain this forever. So there are times when you've got a sprint, and in a lot of sessions that we deliver, we don't talk about eradicating stress. We talk about stress is there to allow us to achieve extraordinary things, but then we've got to come back down again and recover. So actually, if you identify a new role you're in, I'm gonna have a run at this, and I'm gonna make the best possible impact I can. But actually, I acknowledge this is not gonna be sustainable forever. And again, not wishing to sound really old, but stuff that I could do when I was 23, I can't do now. Physically, mentally, I can't work the hours I used to work, because it's just exhausting. So acknowledge that it's not sustainable to have a sprint at it. And also, people are often not thinking about you in the same way that you think that they are. Just take a bit of perspective that the boss will be impressed with you if you deliver what is asked of you. But young people are changing the culture. I've seen it in policing. The people that are coming through now are changing the way the older ones are managing stress, and they're being better role models perhaps than the older generation. So be that role model for the people in the organisation as well.
And I think that young people in the industry, a lot of them want to progress, and they work the hours, as you say, they put in the extra time. How do you think when do you recognize normal work stress is becoming something a bit more serious?
Well, like I said, in many industries, but I think it's particularly relevant in construction, is actually we've got to get this work over the line. We've got to get this stuff done. And saying, well, you know, I'm gonna knock off early today or whatever, or I'm not feeling up to it today, is probably not going to be sustainable in construction. But it's understanding that those sprint phases have got to be followed with a period of recovery. And I'm not saying then you don't do any work for 6 months or whatever, or take a week off, because that's not possible. But building in that time to come back down, and it might be that's achieved it, that you achieve that at the weekend. You can say, actually, I've been in this sprint phase now for 2 or 3 weeks. I've started to notice some things in myself. Perhaps my tell was I'd be ratty with my people at home, my wife or my children. I'd be snappy. I'm very lucky that they'll say, "Everything all right?" You know, so those flags that you know in yourself are there. It's just to say, right, I've been going at this 100% now for this period of time, and I've noticed these things in myself, and I need to now manage that, take something out of the jar, metaphorically speaking, in terms of pressures, and prioritize yourself for it all then.
So what's one simple habit that people could introduce to their daily routine that would make a big positive impact on their mental health?
I think perhaps that sitting down, and whether it's over a cup of coffee in the morning or when you drive into work or whatever, just then, how do I feel? You know, am I grinding my teeth at the traffic lights? Or am I irritated by the person that's cut in? Or was I a bit rattled? So it's just that period of self-reflection, just to say, how am I feeling? And acknowledging that perhaps it isn't perfect. I've done most sessions I do, I get everyone in the room to stand up and do box breathing. So the special forces use that when they're going into really challenging environments and bringing stress down. So I suppose the daily habit would be, just give yourself a little bit of a MOT on the way in. But actually, if you've noticed yourself getting up to a point where it's a bit much, or you're going into a meeting or a set of circumstances where it's difficult, just do a little box breathing. And that worked really well.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So looking ahead, what gives you hope for the future of mental health in construction?
I just think, if you were put together a group of people that could get over anything, it would be the people that are already in construction. So we just need to give them the time and the resource to have a think about this. And this is totally achievable. We've done it before. So we've done it in terms of physical health and safety. So we can do it again. And we just need to think about it in the same way. So how are we going to prevent people from becoming unwell? How are we going to protect them? And actually, we know that some people are going to become unwell, and we need to be prepared when that happens, you know, in the same way as we have first aid kits on building sites and those things. So I think the workforce and the talent that's in there, we just need to get over this sort of cultural change, a little bit of stigma removal, and I think the future is bright in terms of mental health and construction.
So if every construction company was listening today and they were committed to changing one thing, what one thing would that be?
That's a brilliant question. I think training for first line managers. I think that if I had, in terms of return on investment, and what lever could I pull that would have the biggest impact, is those people that have first-line management responsibilities, giving them, first of all, to prioritise their own well-being, and second of all, to spot the signs and support those people in their teams. That, I think, is where the biggest benefit lies.
Okay. And finally, one closing question. So imagine every managing director, project manager, site manager, apprentice across the UK was listening to this podcast. What's one message you'd like them to take away from today's conversation?
It sounds brutal, this, or perhaps a little bit unemotional, but mental ill health cost the UK economy $56 billion last year. So actually, if we can spend some time and thought, it's going to make those really thin margins in construction a little bit bigger. So construction is incredibly challenging. This is a business decision. So if you invest time and effort and resource, it doesn't necessarily need to be cash terms, into thinking about the well-being and mental safety of your supply chain and immediate employees, you'll get a return on that investment. You'll get money back. You will become more profitable as a result by doing that.
And we spend a significant amount in protecting people's physical health.
Mm.
If we invest that same amount in their mental health, are we potentially going to see happier workers, better, improved efficiency, improved output?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think almost certainly. But I don't think it needs money, loads of money chucking at it. This needs the cultural change that we talked about. It's not going to be free. You've got to spend money. And actually, if you've got a load of people on day rate on a building site, and you take them all out off the building site to give them training on mental health and well-being, or they're on the price of the job, they're not going to thank you for that. So we need to think about how we remunerate people in terms of delivering that training and incentivize people to come along to it and changing that culture. But I think that's the key to it is thinking creatively. It's not just about chucking millions of pounds in.
Well, hopefully podcasts like this will make that culture change, make companies recognize the importance of people's mental health, and overall improve the industry in that respect. I don't have any more questions. I'd like to thank you very much for your time today, Rob.
No, thanks for having me, David. It was great fun.
So thank you very much. And one closing thought to any of our listeners. If you are experiencing challenges at work, stress, make sure you seek help, you recognize the importance this is having on your mental health, because that is the key which we need to tackle, is your mental health in the industry. It's just that recognition to seek help and accept that it's always all right to ask for help. Thank you very much for listening to this G4C podcast, Building Better Minds.